So, hello and welcome to Finding Your North Star, the HGKC podcast series where we talk to prominent business people about their experiences and challenges of innovation. I'm Peter Quintana, and I'm delighted to welcome today Martin Thatcher, fourth generation cider maker and managing director at Thatcher's Cider. Welcome, Martin.
Morning, Peter.
So we met at the Insider Southwest breakfast for family and owner managed businesses, and afterwards had a conversation about the challenges of balancing the need for innovation balancing the need for innovation to keep a business moving forward with the need to preserve the legacy and traditions that have given businesses like Thatcher's the resilience to survive through multiple generations. As I recall, that's not really a challenge that you particularly recognise, is it? So how do you manage to embed innovation at Thatcher's in the way that you have?
Well, I think it's there's a culture of change in the business, and we're always changing. And I think people get used to change. Yeah. And that's what perpetuates the change. But I think what drives it in the first place is having people in the business that really want to win. And if you want to win, you know you've got to keep improving, and improving means change, and change allows improvement, and that allows you to win. So I think really what it is about is about all the people in the business wanting to win and do better than our competitors, and that's what keeps us very focused. Change is, not everybody likes change, and change can be painful, but if your overriding desire is to do really well, then you cope with change. And once people get used to it, I think it just happens naturally.
It becomes a way of life, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. I recall you saying that people are likely to come back to you if there hasn't been change in their department or their area. And that is, it is very unusual. I know you know it's about having a company full of people that want to win, and that's really good. But when you're recruiting, how do you ensure that the recruits that you appoint have this openness to change, either now or could be brought to the point where they have that much openness to change?
I think it's almost impossible to tell when you recruit people whether they've got this will, desire and drive for change. And some of them, frankly, probably at that moment may not have, but with embedded in a culture that is used to change, they get used to it and enjoy it and thrive on it and move forward. Some people, yes, for sure, come with it, and that's great. Some people, I'm afraid, just don't have it, just don't want to do it, and therefore probably don't stick around long, because if you don't like change and you're in a culture that's changing fast, pretty uncomfortable, and therefore people tend not to stick around. So can we spot that at interview? Really hard, really hard. I mean, sometimes it's obvious that people won't, and then generally it's not until people get involved in the business. And I think lots of people say, yeah, they love change. But I think when it comes to the crunch, it is quite a different matter.
I think that's very true. I've always believed that human beings are more open to change than most people would give them credit for. Because if you think about the way we evolve right from birth, the amount of change we go through is phenomenal, isn't it? By the time we're five, we've learned at least one language. We've learned to walk, to goodness knows what else. But I agree with you, in working life, it can feel very, very uncomfortable. And I think the key is involvement. If people are involved in the rationale for change, that's what makes a difference. It gives them more of a purpose, doesn't it?
Well, and I think it's important. And I think the people who like it, when there's a fast change in environment and things are being developed and new ideas and new technology coming along, I mean, it is a great environment to work in, and people love it, and therefore that would be something that they wouldn't want to change, is the pace of change, if you like. So your thoughts on people come to me when there isn't change, it's an important thing. It's a very good barometer to make sure that people are embracing change. But also sometimes it's a question of, you can't focus on every department all of the time, and sometimes you've got priorities, and there's an area you think, actually, maybe we should go back and go through the loop again and see what we can improve. And as a business, our mantra is just really just looking at every single thing we do. And if we can improve everything 1 or 2%, and you do it on hundreds of small things, it's amazing how far you move forward quite fast. And so it is about focusing on every little detail, making it better. When you made it better, go back, start again, and see if you can make it better again.
It's been the principle behind the principle behind the success of the GB cycling team, hasn't it? You know, the tiny little changes to get to get them to the success that they've had.
Exactly, and just once you get down to that last 10%, that's what makes you just better than your competitors. And in a very tough environment, and you know, business is tough, you just have to be better than your competitors. You can't be the same or worse, because people won't buy it. So you have to be better. So our philosophy is, look at our competitors and make sure that we're always better. And if we can possibly grow that margin between us and them, then that's exactly what we need to do.
Excellent. So Thatcher's have been making cider since 1904, I understand. And a quick look at your website tells a story of innovation from the first hydraulic presses installed by your grandfather, I believe, in 1965, to the more recent changes in the way you plant trees, which gives you a greater density per acre. And I know you make more cider in a day now than you did in a year when you first became managing director, and that's pretty extraordinary. What's been the most significant innovation in the long history of Thatcher's, do you think, and what's been its impact on Thatcher's development overall over all that time?
And I mean, it's a very good question, and it's quite a difficult one to answer, to say there's one single bit of innovation that has made a change. I think through the company's progress, there have been a number of significant milestones that have helped shape what we've done. And the first one was probably when we changed our first hydraulic press style that my grandfather bought, to the type of presses we use now, the Booker type presses. And the reason that changed the business enormously was that suddenly pressing apples wasn't a chore. It was actually quite easy to do, and it was clean, and it was efficient, and it was repeatable, and we could control all the quality so that we could get exactly what we wanted. And we bought our first Booker press 30 years ago, and it was from Richard Purdy at Merrydown. And that transformed the way we pressed apples. Now, that led on to the next bit of innovation, was that we started pressing Katy, which was almost impossible to press on our old style presses. And that led us to single varieties. And the reason that that was so important is we started looking really carefully and in every little detail of how apples make different characteristics in cider and how the varieties affect those characteristics. And from that has led to us to which orchards and where they're grown to what characteristics. So sometimes these innovations start the catalyst, which lead on to many other things. So on the side, on the quality side and how we actually make our cider and what's it like, then that was a very important change.
It's almost elevated cider making to, I used the word elevated, but it's brought cider making to the same level as wine, hasn't it? Because wine has different characteristics depending on the different grapes, has different characteristics depending on the soil quality in different vineyards, and cider has become at that level, which I guess people wouldn't have thought of years ago, would they?
And we started doing single varieties 25 years ago, I suppose.
Really? Wow.
Katie, 25. This may be the 26th year now we've been doing Katie. We were the first people to do single varieties, but we've done numerous different types from there, and it allows us to understand exactly what the apple does and the importance of using different varieties of apples. And so everything's been embraced to that. So we've created a chart with the main varieties of apples that we grow. And we've created charts which shows how much tannin they've got in, the acidity, the sweetness. And that allows us to explain to people about the importance of blending apples, different types of apples together to get a particular type of cider, or indeed if you do a single variety of cider, where you get those particular characteristics. So for us, that's been an important part of the company's development over more than 20 years. Of learning some phenomenally good information about how you make cider. And I really don't think anybody else is doing that in the detail we're doing it. And the important thing is that leads us to make much better cider from what we learn from our apples.
Oh, it's fascinating. And that does, that is a differentiator that is quite difficult to replicate, I would have thought. It should keep you ahead of your competitors for quite a long time within that.
Well, it's one of those things that I suppose can be done, but it takes a lot of time. I mean, yeah, you know, we've learned this over 25 years.
But it's that 25 years experience that is now the differentiator between you and your competitors, isn't it?
And so I come back to my earlier comment, you know, the only way to win is to be better than your competitors. And that is one area where we know we are keeping ahead and continually developing what we do.
Yeah, fascinating. So interesting then, because let's look a bit forward, because there's been lots of developments, you know, single varieties, which you've talked about, but now you've got different flavours, different fruits, rise of ciders from outside the UK, even the brewing of cider in Asia. So looking forward, where do you think the cider industry is going to go next, and what opportunities do you see for Thatcher's?
Well, I've been involved in the cider industry for, less than 32 years
all
ago.
All your life.
But also probably involved in quite a bit of it before I left school. And I think like every other business and industry, it goes up and down and it goes in cycles. And I've seen cider being popular, I've seen it being less popular, I've seen it come back and being popular again. And, you know, we saw the things like the fruit ciders that weren't called fruit ciders 15 years ago come meteoric rise and almost destroyed the cider industry. And then went, and the cider industry, apple cider, is still there as it just continues on. So while there's changes, there's always that steady bit. And I think apple cider is, pardon the pun, is the core of what the whole industry does. And therefore, it is always going to be there in the future. And new things come and go. And to be honest, it's good that they do, because fruit cider has brought in a whole new generation of cider drinkers that start on fruit cider and develop onto apple cider. So, you know, that's good as far as we were concerned. I think if you go back another stage, Magners did a phenomenally good job of bringing in new drinkers into the cider industry. And with their advertising and drinking over ice, they just excited people into cider again, and cider grew enormously. So I'm always quite optimistic that all the time there's something going on that will drive the industry going forward. And sometimes there's a period of plateau, and then it shoots forward again because somebody comes up that ignites interest and excites the consumer.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about what you were saying about Magners. They made cider cool, didn't they?
Yeah.
There've been a reputation for cider being this sort of murky, dark drink that you find on the corner of a quiet village pub somewhere in Somerset or Herefordshire or wherever, and these sort of wizened old guys drinking it in the corner, and it being, you know, so strong that you'd have one sniff and you'd fall over if you weren't used to it. But it's different from that now, and it's become a cool drink amongst young people in young people's pubs, isn't it?
And I think, you know, Magners did stick in amongst it, whether it was deliberate or inadvertent, but the knock-on effects were that because it was from a bottle and because it was over ice, the cider didn't all fit in the pint glass, but the bottle was on the table. Oh, right, that looks interesting. I'll try one of those. I mean, it was clever and innovative what they did and changed that period of the cider industry, which is great. And of course, we're always looking to be that next big innovation, but there's lots of other very clever people looking at what can be done next. So I'm always excited and slightly philosophical about it will go up and down and up and down, and what you've got to do is try and ride the upside. And I think one of the things that we recognised, or I recognised about 10 years ago, I was lucky enough to do a Nuffield scholarship, which was fantastic experience and, you know, great learning for me. And I was out in America looking at the shelves in Asda and looking at what Americans would call cider, which we would call apple juice or juices. Mm. And their fixture was enormous. It was about, I don't know, 8 or 9 bays long. It was huge. And I spoke to one of the producers and said, you know, how does a consumer have any idea what they should choose? Such a big choice. And he said, apple juice is on the up, and the supermarkets are giving it more and more space. And so everybody's piling in. He said, be warned, it will turn down. And when it does turn down, if you're not in the top 20 or 30% of the sales, then you'll be out. So your sales won't just reduce, it'll actually be going down to zeros. So our philosophy has really been, we want to be in the top, ideally the top one, but if not in the top 10 or 20% of the lines in the, either in the supermarkets or in the pubs, so that we're always on shelf. And, you know, never is there any doubt that we're going to be delisted when this shelf space does shrink, and it will shrink. Inevitably, the market changes, there's something new comes along and the shelf space is needed. So very much a philosophy, back to our winning, we want to be first, we want to be at the top of the pile.
Which means that, you know, back to constantly innovating and trying to almost predict, forecast where the market's going so that you can be there.
Well, innovation, of course, and that's behind it all. But once you've innovated, then the trick, in my view, is keep it simple and focus on a few things and do them really well. So we've tried to keep the business as simple as we possibly can and focus on a few things that really matter and just drive and drive and drive until it's brilliant, and keep developing and keep improving and do all the other things we've talked about all of the time to make those few things absolutely brilliant, rather than trying to do quite a lot of things okay.
Mm. Okay. So it's obviously paying dividends, isn't it? Because you're award-winning, you're selling in more than 22 countries worldwide, developing a reputation for some quirky advertising. Featuring hot air balloons that don't fly and racing cars that don't go very fast. But it's, as you said already, it's a tough sector to survive in. But you know, from the outside, it looks like you're positively thriving. So what's your approach personally, I suppose, to identifying, analysing, dealing with the challenges that you must be facing on a daily basis? I know you have your kitchen table, you put people around, but what's your approach? How do you maintain your focus and your willingness every morning to get up and say, how are we going to win today?
Okay, well, there's lots of things, and you talked about the kitchen table. You know, family businesses traditionally have made their decisions around the kitchen table, and I have actually got a kitchen table in my office that when we have the top team down around sitting around making decisions, it's around the kitchen table, which is symbolic to a family business. And just to remind people that sometimes it's better to make a decision and get it slightly wrong than not to make a decision. At least you have a chance of getting it right and you have a chance of making it moving forward. So as a business, we're very keen to not put off decisions, not be worried that you make a wrong decision, but perhaps be more worried about not making a decision. And the other thing is if we make a decision that's not quite right, it's good to just hold your hands up and say, actually, this is not working. We need to change this.
Yeah.
And then change it quickly. And often those are some of the best decisions that we've ever made, because you're probably pushing at the edge and challenging yourself quite hard. So I think that's important. I think to make that work, you have to have amazing people in your business. And, you know, we've got some great people who've grown up with a business, who've literally started as boys and, you know, are here now in very senior positions as men. And on that, on the back of recognizing that, we have probably a little bit later than a lot of people, but embraced apprenticeships. And now we are very much into training young people, and we have a number of apprentices here. And in fact, last week we won some fantastic awards. We had the best overall apprentice at Western College, and then we won the best business who's doing apprenticeships at Western College, which was a great learn.
Congratulations.
For that. But really, it's just us trying to develop and train the next generation of leaders within the business. And one of the ways we believe that is about, they need to see the whole business and understand how things work across a big breadth. And then as they move up through the business, they then focus on what the best projects are, or that what suits them best. They have a working knowledge of everything else, and I think that's really important. And that is one of the great things about apprenticeships in general, is it gives these young people a really broad view of how business works, which in my view undoubtedly is going to be hugely beneficial for them in the future.
Good. Well, it sounds pretty thorough. And that was more or less your path through the company as well, wasn't it, before you wound up at that chair?
I didn't get to university. I left school and started work, and I worked around the business. In fact, I didn't want to be a cider maker. I always wanted to be a farmer. So I learned to lamb sheep, milk cows, drive tractors, do all the farming stuff. And then I came back and drove a lorry for a few years delivering the cider, and then was a salesperson, did the accounts bit, marketing. So I've done the whole lot through my time. And I think, again, just allows you to understand how everything works. And then when you're making decisions, you can say, okay, that'll work because. And I think it's a huge benefit that I think sometimes young people are very impatient to get to their final discipline. And when they're young, that's the time to be patient and give themselves a bit of time to learn other things.
Yeah. So you've talked about this being a family business. We've talked about that, but running a family business is all about stewardship, isn't it? Leaving the firm in a better place for the next generation. I know you have two children, and I've heard the story you've told about them fighting over who's eventually going to take over from you, which is funny, but also quite pointed, really, isn't it? Quite poignant, rather. What do you want to leave for whichever one of them does take over, or perhaps they both take over? I don't know what your plans are, but what would you think you'd like to leave for them?
Well, I'm very clear that each generation should leave a better business for the next generation than they took on. And I think that's really, really important. But actually, the most important thing for the business to go on another generation, or another two, three, four, however many generations, is for this generation to train the next generation and teach them what to do. And the apprenticeships clearly important for training people, but from a family point of view, we as a business, me personally, will spend an awful lot of time making sure that the next generation have all the skills they need to lead a business in and develop it in ready for the next generation, and try and instill all the qualities, all the culture that has made us successful into them. And I think out of everything that you should do as a family business, that is the most important thing, to inspire and educate and develop the next generation. Absolutely. And a very old man told me once, Anthony Woodhouse from Horton Woodhouse, who I think is eighth generation brewer, he said, we'll be judged not by what we do, but what the next generation do. And I think that's so true, that we need to make sure they have the ability, the skills and everything else to make business great for another generation.
That's a really good answer, actually, and really fascinating, and it does seem like a good place on which to end this conversation. I think we could probably talk all day, actually, about things like culture and futures and legacies. So it remains for me to thank you, Martin, for joining us, and it's been a real pleasure to talk to you this morning. So you can find out more about the long history and traditions at Thatcher's by visiting their website, www.thatcherscider.co.uk, or of course dropping into your local to sample the magic for yourself. If you'd like to find out more about how we approach innovation, you can listen to other podcasts and download our white paper called Finding Your North Star from our website, which is www.htkc.co.uk. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.